The following is an Auburn Network production. You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what sports talk radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Happy Monday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this November 10th, 2025. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. He is Christian Griffin. We appreciate you being with us on what has been a chilly Monday here in the Auburn Opelika area. Cold front decided to sneak its way through the plains overnight and into today. This is my type of weather, though, man. If you know me, I'm a cold weather guy. I love this temperature. Sun is out, a little bit of a breeze as well. This is my type of weather. Most people around here can't stand it, but that's okay. Other than that, hope you're having a fantastic Monday. It is, unfortunately, another losing Monday, another Auburn football loss Monday, but it feels different, right? It's a different type of loss. We'll talk about that today, dive into what happened in Nash Vegas over the weekend, plus everything else going on around college football. What's going on, Christian? How are you on this Monday?
Yeah, Monday to you, sir. It does feel a little bit different, both with the loss and the weather. You mentioned it. Yeah, I mean, this is very different, and when the wind's not blowing, it feels incredible, but man, it's the cold front with the breeze that makes it to where it's just not overly enjoyable sitting outside. And so we haven't, or at least I haven't, broken the curse. I think you've already broken the curse of what this Friday is supposed to look like.
I did so from a
precipitation standpoint?
Yeah, from a preparation standpoint.
Sure. And?
So far, so good.
Okay. Like, so is the cold front sticking around until then?
Or No. We'll be back in the 70s like tomorrow.
Holy cow. Yeah. I haven't even looked at that. But yeah. Monday to you, sir. Things do feel a little bit different. However, we're kind of breaking down each segment of our show in the first hour into a different part of the game on from Saturday. I mean, we have our generic thoughts and just the overall recap we're going to start off the show with. Here today at 2:15, we're talking a little bit about the offense, giving our flowers where they're due, and then just some questions that need to be answered with the Auburn offense. And same thing at 2:30 with DJ Durkin and the defense. Is he still a legitimate candidate for the Auburn head coaching job? The fan base, again, very split on that conversation right now. The inevitable step back when your main guy takes a step away from his main role, puts on a little bit of a different headset, a little bit of a different role. Things are naturally going to feel and look a little bit different, but how different did they look on Saturday? I think that's a big discussion that we will talk about. And when we get into hour number two, we'll look around the SEC, the top 25, and then a big quarterback question, as you never want to wish away any sort of current season or anything like that, but you also have to be strategic in how you go about preparation and strategy for the future. And so we'll have a conversation on redshirting possibilities and what that is going to look like with the bye week, Mercer, and then in the Iron Bowl here coming up. But a really, really fun show, a jam-packed, especially hour number one here on the Monday edition of On the Line.
Yep, and so if you have thoughts on what happened this weekend as Auburn falls to Vanderbilt 45-38 in Nashville in overtime, we'd love to hear from you. Phone lines are open, 334-321-1390. That number again, 334-321-1390. You can give us a call there. Give us your thoughts, or you can shoot us a text in the On the Line text box, which is always open at 334-784-1067. Auburn falls to Vanderbilt 45-38 in overtime, and yes, it's a loss, another loss, right? But it feels different to me. It feels different. It felt different on Saturday because you and I were discussing, we actually enjoyed watching the game for four plus quarters, right? I mean, yeah. Sure, there were some frustrating moments. There were some times where you wanted to rip your hair out and were screaming at the TV or the radio or whatever, sure, but man, we finally got what we asked for. Auburn, for the first time since Baylor, looked competent on offense. Looked like they belonged in a P4 football game on offense.
Looked like they actually had the talent that we've heard the names from all season long.
Looked like they knew what the hell was going on. For the first time since Baylor. And it was in multiple ways, not just from the quarterback running all over the place like we saw in Waco in the opener and fooled ourselves and convinced ourselves that the offense was good. This actually looked legitimate. And it was fun. It was exciting.
And balanced.
And all the words. Right? And so there's several directions that we're going to go today. But let's start with what we asked for, which was, man, let this offense look good. And it did. Was it perfect? No. But it was good. You put up 38 points, man. You put up more points than you have all season long in one game alone on the road against a decent Vanderbilt defense. I wouldn't say they're great, but they're decent. They got some dudes, right? And you finally put it together offensively. But of course, in the most Auburn way possible, it's the worst game the defense has played in probably 2 years.
Yeah. It's a weird situation that we sit in here today because, like what you mentioned, we got our wish. We got our wish of, man, look at some of these other teams. Yes, they're going out and losing games, but we kind of compared it to Arkansas, not the talent or anything, but just the way that they go and play their games. It's got to at least be halfway fun to watch. There's at least points being scored, and you feel like regardless of what the other offense does, you feel like you put yourself in a chance to where if you have to go drive down the field again, so be it. Let's go do it. Mm-hmm. That was what happened on Saturday. You put up more points than you had in your last three combined losses. That hurts.
Yeah.
3 points, 17 points, and 10 points to Kentucky, Missouri, and Georgia. Almost, you could add the A&M points in there. You could if you took away basically the defensive touchdown that we give Xavier Atkins and that 10 points that Auburn put up in Aggieland. That being said, yeah, for the very first time, you feel like you're on this weird side of, man, so this is how the other half of college football lives. This is how, not even that, this is how a majority of college football fans work nowadays, where it's like if you get that one stop, you win the football game. If you're able to make that one tackle, if you don't have that one defensive penalty away from the football where second and 10 becomes third and 18, instead you get an automatic first down, add 15 to it, and they march down and score. If you get that one stop, you win the football game. It's all we've asked for, and unfortunately, you got that to the extreme and to the teetotal definition of, man, the offense looks great. And DJ Durkin would be the first to tell you, as he told his team in the locker room, for the first time this season, the defense let the offense down.
I mean, I think this is the first time the defense has let the offense down for Auburn since 4th and 31.
Yeah.
That's what I go back to. That's what I go back to is 4th and 31, which, correct me if I'm wrong, was that Hugh Freeze's first season?
It was.
So you're talking over 2 years ago, or almost 2 years ago. This was the first time you come out of a game, and we sit here on a Monday because we've joked about it every single week over the past nearly 2 years of, here we are again, can't blame the defense. They played their butts off. They did what they were supposed to do. And how many times have we talked about the Auburn defense doing more than they were supposed to? Arkansas being a perfect example, right?
Yeah, to actually go and be the reason you actually won a football game.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking double-digit times that we've had that exact same conversation. But this is the first time we've been on the flip side of it since 4th and 31, where, yeah, unfortunately, and it hurts. It hurts me to do it. But if you're pointing to a side of the ball to blame, which we typically do, you got to point at the defense. You give up 45 points in this game. I know a 7 of those came in overtime, right? But you give up 45 points to Vanderbilt. You give up 544 yards to the Commodores, 377 of that through the air. You let them go 7 of 12 on third down. You just can't have that. And every time they put the ball in the air, they were averaging over 11 yards per play. That's not the Auburn defense. That's not the Auburn way. That's not what DJ Durkin has built here. And so it hurts to, quote-unquote, blame the defense, but don't they deserve a hall pass here? Don't they deserve a little grace?
How many times, adding to your point, did we predict, all right, this is the Saturday where the defense just inevitably caves in,
yeah,
right? This is the time when the defense is unable to get that stop. However, we sat there and said, but to be honest, you can't really blame them because of everything that they've had to do. Unfortunately, it's that double-edged sword because they're now the ones that have to take the blame, and the only reason there's frustration is because the head coach who was calling the plays did not call the plays on Saturday, and we'll get to that. And Derek Nix, now he deserves his credit here in just a little bit. But the only reason that there's any sort of frustration towards the defense at all this year is because the offense finally decided to show up.
Well, and that's the thing, too, is it's you feel like you're being nitpicky here, but we continued to say that, like you mentioned, of, okay, maybe this was the Saturday or this was the Saturday that the defense was going to finally give in, but we figured they would give – and I'm not saying they gave in against Vanderbilt.
No.
I'm saying they just got beat against Vanderbilt. It is what it is. But we kept saying that the defense was going to give in and just finally break because they weren't getting the support from the offense. And the one time that the defense finally got the support of the offense is the one time that they just got beat. And that's just unfortunate. We're not playing the blame game. I'm not. I mean, you might be and fans might be, and that's fine. I'm not.
Not as much.
I'm not going there.
No. And again, even if you are playing the quote-unquote blame game, I don't think that it's with necessarily true frustration or ill intent.
It's
more
just
the fact of it's just kind of how it played out. And
that's tough. It is what it is.
The speech that you saw from the staff and from DJ Durkin, both in the locker room and in the press conference, but even before the press conference one where he was sitting there getting emotional talking about the team and the players, but hearing him, like I was talking about, say to his team for the first time, defense, we didn't make enough plays. The offense played their you-know-what's off, and we're the reason. We're the guys that are to blame this week. And, yeah, very, very interesting feelings that everybody had to ponder all weekend because I was one of them. You were one of them. Our buddy Jack, who we all watched the game together, kind of sat there, and it was like, how do we feel?
Yeah.
Because you feel like you could make the pros and cons list, but just based off, again, our conversation and the fact that for the first time, although Auburn has lost 6 of their last 7, we don't start the show with the Christmas tree on the phone lines. It feels like it kind of gives a little bit of the answer, not of throwing in the towel, but you at least feel like there's some sort of satisfaction because we talked about it all last week. Change had to have been made one way or the other. Unfortunately, in this game, you saw a major change on both sides of the football.
Yeah, and just to speak to the defense a little bit more here, I mean, you've got to give flowers to Diego Pavia, man.
That hurts
dude,
to say.
That dude got Auburn again. He got him again.
489 yards of total offense and 4 touchdowns.
The dude's a baller. He's a baller.
He did what he wanted.
I mean, there's nothing else you can say. You simply have to tip your cap to the guy. And I don't think there's any voodoo happening that Auburn can't beat him. I just think he's a really good player. And I think his offense flows with him. They call plays for him. And the dude just makes plays when he has to.
And then we'll get to this conversation when we talk a little bit more about the defense as a whole, getting into a little bit more specifics here later on. But we felt a little differing coming into today about just the quality of offense. And going off of that point, I mean, this might be the most complete offense that you've seen so far this year. And I think you think a little bit otherwise, and I don't mean necessarily from a talent standpoint, but from the true definition of your offense calls plays that truly put their players in the best possible space and the best possible spot to succeed. I mean, this is the most successful an offense has been, and it's because of the guy at quarterback and how you call plays that he's comfortable with, and he can use his athleticism to get the best of you.
Yeah, I think Texas A&M has a pretty solid offense. I think Georgia.
I think from a talent standpoint, yes.
But I think Arkansas is a better. I mean, here's the crazy thing, though. Vanderbilt didn't run the ball that well. They ran for, what, 167 yards in this game?
I mean, if you don't include Diego Pavia, yes.
Yeah, I mean, I just think that Diego Pavia was able to make plays, and Auburn couldn't find number 9. Auburn kept losing that guy.
12 grabs, 122 yards.
That just doesn't happen against DJ Durkin's defense. It doesn't. And we think there's a reason for that, which we brought up on Friday, and we'll get to here in just a little bit. But that's on one side of the ball. The defense played its worst game of the season. Unfortunately, it happened when the offense played their best game of the season. And we talk about the offense next, and we ask the question, Hugh Freeze, what the heck were you doing? What were you doing in your 2.5 years here with the play sheet in your hands? We try to answer that question when we come back. We're off and running here on the Monday edition of On the Line. Give us a call. We know you got thoughts. We'd love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. We're back right after this.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
We are back here on the Monday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7 as we talk Auburn football's loss to Vanderbilt in overtime this weekend. If you have thoughts, give us a call, 334-321-1390, or you could shoot us a text in the On the Line text box at 334-784-1067. Auburn loses to Vanderbilt 45-38 in overtime, and as crazy as it was to watch the defense not be able to get consistent stops against Vanderbilt on Saturday, it was just as crazy, if not crazier, to see the Auburn offense just...
Yeah, to see Vanderbilt's defense not consistently get stops.
All of a sudden, just Auburn figured it out. Auburn's offense puts up historic numbers.
Historic numbers.
What changed, Christian? Do you know? Variable. Let's use some scientific terms here. I'm really good at science. I got a D in Chem 2 in college. Nice. How about Chem 2, hardest class I've ever taken in my life was at Auburn University, by the way. I studied. Dude, I'm not kidding. I did homework for that stupid class 4 or 5 hours a day, and still got a D.
Can't say that I took that. I did take, I think it was Chem 1 in high school. And for some reason, I was told that AP Chem was the way that I needed to go. I was in that for a couple of weeks and dropped out.
Yeah, nah, dude. Science
realized
is not my
thing.
This
is not what I want to be a part of.
But I do know some scientific terms, and I know a variable is something that you can change in an experiment, right? And
it depends. Is it the independent variable or the dependent variable?
This would be the dependent variable, right? Because this is the one, whatever one you can change, right? Because, or maybe it is the independent. So you can definitely tell that we're not science guys. But in a science experiment, right, you have different variables that you can change
throughout. The independent variable is the one that changes. Dependent stays the same.
Wow, nicely done. Nicely done.
The independent variable is the cause and effect variable.
Right. So that's the thing that you can change and then run the experiment again to see if you get different results, right? Did Auburn do that? I think they did.
I think this was week one of the independent variable being changed. And I think based off of the science projects, the science fair projects that I did do, when you only have, I did a lot of these science fair projects, and so I'm a really good expert on it. When you only have one person that calls plays, it's a hell of a lot easier than when three people are trying to do it.
And when you take the main guy out of the equation and give it back to the person who was supposed to be the main part of the equation, all of a sudden, your offense puts up 38 points on the road in the SEC when the lead, 500 yards of offense.
When the lead chef is not the one that has to keep his calm when the person asks for their third Coke in 10 minutes and you allow the server to do it, makes things a little bit easier.
Yeah. You don't see Gordon Ramsay in there on Hell's Kitchen cooking up some risotto, do you? No, he gives it to the people that are supposed to do it. So one variable changes between the last 2.5 years and what happened on Saturday in Nashville, and all of a sudden, Auburn's offense looks legit.
You saw it in two drives. You saw it on the first drive, but there was excitement, but there was also, okay, well, that's the one time that Auburn's offense had looked good, is the first scripted drive of the game. However, you felt a little bit different because it was like, oh, look, that's a 3rd and 8 that just got, oh, that's a 3rd and 19, that, oh, a 3rd and 6, all on the same drive.
Oh, my God, is that Cam Coleman?
Is that Malcolm Simmons on a screen? He hasn't touched the football in 3 games.
In weeks.
That's crazy. Perry Thompson, is that you? My goodness, yeah. Eric Singleton over the middle of the field. Cam Coleman on routes that go towards a logo.
50-50 balls to 8?
Man.
What?
292 yards in the first half, which is more than 4 of the last 6 conference games as a whole that Auburn's offense has put up.
Jesus.
If somebody is listening that has the stat that watched the game on TV, I don't remember exactly what it is. I'm pretty positive this is it. I know the year for sure, but I'm all but positive that the announcer said that it's the most first half yards that Auburn has put up since the national championship in 2010. I don't know if that is 100% accurate on the national championship, but I know the year was 2010, and that is absurd to think about. Going even further, it's the first time that Auburn's had a 350-yard passer, a 100-yard rusher, and a 100-yard receiver since the 2004 SEC Championship game. And Auburn did it with 2 100-yard receivers in Cam Coleman and Eric Singleton Jr.
I'll add in some more science terms for you. This is not for me.
Oh, gosh.
But this is fantastic. So you're saying that Hugh Freeze was an anti-catalyst, so to speak. Hashtag Chem2. Would you like to know what anti-catalyst definition is? A substance that slows down or inhibits a chemical reaction, either by directly on the catalyst or by increasing the reaction's activation energy. Quote, a substance that slows down or inhibits a chemical reaction.
Let's go.
That's fantastic.
You could say that he
was... That is not my words. That is from our text box, but that is fantastic. An anti-catalyst.
Would you say that he is not the mitochondria either?
He's definitely not the powerhouse. No. No. The powerhouse of that cell has been rocked. That's fantastic.
That's pretty good right there. Credit to you.
But like...
563 yards of offense.
That's just baffling to me. That is, I mean, we said it on Friday, right? And I said it all week long, that the offense was going to look better against Vanderbilt because it simply had to. There was no possible way. When you hit rock bottom, you know which way there is to go? There's only one way to go. Do you know what it is? When you hit rock bottom, there's only one place to go. Up. And that's what our Auburn's offense was. It was rock bottom. It was historically bad. Okay? You scored 3 points at home against Kentucky at night. That's as bad as it gets. on 3 points that your offense didn't even get. They didn't even earn it. The defense gave it to you again, right? It could not get any worse. So I said by default, the Auburn offense had to get better against Vanderbilt. And not only did it get better, again, it looked good. Ashton Daniels looked good. Running backs looked good. Offensive line, eh. Eh.
Penalties are still something that we will.
We will. Cam Coleman reminded not just Auburn fans, not just SEC fans, he reminded college football, or maybe told college football since they forgot who he was. Not his fault. He showed the world why he's a top three receiver in college football.
Showed why going into this year, Auburn was supposed to have the top duo in college football. And Cam Coleman and Eric Singleton Jr. to compete with Jeremiah Smith and Carnell Tate, who have been all as advertised.
And Elijah Surratt and Omar Cooper in Indiana.
I don't think they had as much going into the season. I think they've now more evolved because of what Mendoza and Cignetti have given to them. But that shows you what coaching can do, of how much they can drop or be raised by good play calling.
So when you put your players in a position to be successful, they're successful?
Correct, yes. When you trust Cam Coleman when he's single covered to go and win a one-on-one 50-50 ball.
And he did it twice in a row.
He did it like seven times. He had 10 grabs. Eric Singleton had 11 for 245 combined yards.
Shout out Cam Coleman. We'll talk more offense coming up next.
You're 30 minutes into On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Now back to the studio with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
30 minutes in to hour number one here on the Monday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. I'm Jacob Goins. He is Christian Griffin. Phone lines are open if you want to be a part of the show. 334-321-1390. Your thoughts on Auburn football losing to Vanderbilt this weekend in Nashville. If you want to talk about the offense being good, the defense not in this game, or anything in between, we'd love to hear from you.
The anti-catalyst.
It's unbelievable. That's just, again, I'm not smart enough to come up with that, but if the fans want to run with it, that is their choice. 334-321-1390 is the phone line number. And, of course, the text box open as well, 334-784-1067. So I'll pose this question to you, Christian, and to our listeners as well. What was more shocking here? Was it the offense being possibly fixed? Again, I don't want to overreact to just one game, right? But, unfortunately, now you've got a bye week, Mercer, and then Alabama, and that's it. And I say unfortunately because if this had happened weeks ago, right, you would have more of the season to possibly build on this and see if there was something here, right?
Yeah, you'd be able to say, oh, look, we still have Missouri. Oh, look, we still have Arkansas. We still have Kentucky and then Vanderbilt.
Which is like, okay, like that's hindsight, right? Nothing you can do about that, and you still want to see this team give it all they've got against Mercer and, of course, in the Iron Bowl at home. But what was more shocking on Saturday? To see the offense perform well or see the defense not perform well?
Oh, man.
In this situation.
I think we expected a little bit of a step back defensively. So I'll still stick with the offense. I'll say that it was more surprising, and I guess it's not even more surprising that the offense looked good, but I guess the sub-bullet point that I'll answer with your question is just the fact that we've talked about it all season long of it being right there. The ability for the offense to have success is there because of the names and because of the talent that we've seen. But the fact that it took 6 days for this game plan to be formulated, and the fact that it was one man, Derek Nix, not more so surprised with that, but just the fact that 6 days after being real, not calling plays, because he was not the guy that was calling plays, You go out there six days later, and it looked like a polished offense. It looked like everybody knew what they were doing most of the time, especially the skill guys.
So you're saying it's not so much that the Auburn offense was fixed. You're more surprised in just how it looked altogether.
That and just the fact that it worked. Yeah, the fact that you saw
that it can be done.
Yes. Yeah. The fact that, wow, we aren't crazy.
Yeah.
That we've had some sort of expectation.
Sure.
And that we've demanded the offense to look something like this. This is the absolute worst case scenario for Hugh Freeze. Saying it like it is, it would have been so much more rewarding for him, and not necessarily from the point of players, because I know if you go ask him, you hope that his team would have success, but from the guru offensive standpoint, the best thing that could have happened on that side of things is Auburn goes out there and puts up 10 points.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that Auburn put up 14 points on two drives in the first two drives of the game, doing it in ways that we had not seen before. And despite the offense being as simple as it's been all season long, I still saw plays on the first two drives of the game that I hadn't seen before.
All year.
All year long. That's the first screen that Malcolm Simmons has caught, especially one where you get the tackle and the guard to go out there and actually have a little bit of a play action. It's one of the few times on the goal line, man, that you're not quite at the goal line, but what was it, the 8 or 9 yard line, you saw Ashton Daniels check. He's at the line of scrimmage.
Yeah, he did.
Talked to his lineman because Auburn had been running the football really, really well. And so Vanderbilt responds by, okay, let's put 8 or 9 in the box, and we're going to put guys on islands with Cam Coleman and Eric Singleton Jr. And they ran an RPO, and Ashton Daniels hit Eric Singleton Jr. right in the middle of the one.
Which goes back to our point that we made months ago, and I think it proves it, that under Hugh Freeze, the quarterbacks,
there was no confidence.
There was no confidence, but I'm saying the quarterbacks, and I'm going back to even Peyton Thorne,
yeah,
they did not have the ability to check. I'm not saying they didn't have the skills to check. I'm saying they didn't have the green light to check.
And I think a play that exemplifies exactly what you're saying.
Well, I think the Ashton Daniels one does for sure.
That's on the positive side. I think on the negative side of things is the pick six that Jackson Arnold threw against Arkansas.
That's exactly right.
I think that is a perfect explanation, because you know that in his ear it was, you are reading this right end right here.
Mm-hmm.
And if he bites, you're throwing the football. If he doesn't, you're handing the ball off. So Jackson, while only reading that right end, had to make a decision, not even able to look at his receiver or his cornerback read yet. And because the cornerback bit, you had to throw the football basically with a blindfold on.
Yeah.
Because there was no ability to make any sort of true decisions. But you go back to the very first drive of the game, the very first touchdown. Auburn gets first and goal, and you see Cam Coleman and Eric Singleton on an island, and he got to choose.
Yeah, pick one.
And he picked the RPO, where everybody bit in, and Eric Singleton ran a beautiful slant, and Ashton Daniels put it on the money.
Yeah. So, I mean, those types of situations and all those different types of plays, right, including an unbelievable grab by Cam Coleman in the end zone. Then you go back to him on the two-point conversion.
Which is the other thing. No safety over top. Nobody can guard.
That should be the ultimate green light. That should be the ultimate trump card, is if Cam Coleman has his, obviously he's going to have the corner lined up on him on the outside, but in the middle of this play, at the snap, if that safety doesn't pull over,
or
that
if they're playing one high.
Yeah, that should be an immediate abandoned ship, throw the football down the field.
Yeah.
Screw it, Cam Coleman's down there somewhere. That should be the ultimate trump card.
Did you hear Eric Singleton say that?
Yeah, he did.
In one of the interviews.
Fantastic.
He said, hey, 8's down there somewhere.
It's true.
It is.
Ohio State does that,
yeah,
for Jeremiah Smith. Indiana does that for Elijah Surratt. Oregon has done that in the past with their receivers.
They do it with their number twos and threes.
That's what good offenses do. It's because you understand you have a mismatch. You have a historically good mismatch.
And you know what also helps? Running the ball for 210 yards.
You better believe
forcing it. Forcing linebackers and safeties to only play 8 or 10 yards away from the line of scrimmage rather than 15, and playing all the way out at the hashes.
And so, again, the question that we're pondering here, we would love to get your insights on this. 334-321-1390 on the phone lines, or the text box is open as well at 334-784-1067, is what was more surprising on Saturday? To see the offense work so well with Derek Nix and Ashton Daniels, or to see the defense take such a big step back with DJ Durkin still claiming to be calling plays? And I think he was, and I want to lean into that. I let you lean into the offense. I want to lean in the defense for a second.
Before that, though, I got a text on my personal phone number at, no, I'm just kidding, but got a text and said, completely agree that the offense was more surprising to me. That being said, is it bad that I feel even more frustrated about the season as a whole? I don't think so.
No, you should absolutely feel frustrated. You should feel shafted. You should feel robbed. You should feel embarrassed.
Because that's what you could have and should have seen all season long.
I'm not even saying could have.
Should have.
That's the word. You should have seen. I mean, dude, I don't condone this, but you've got people on the internet saying that Hugh Freeze was, what's the word I'm looking for? He was
throwing games?
Well, that, but not really. But, like,
I wish I could help you.
I know.
I don't know where you're going with this.
I know. Somebody on the inside that was purposely bringing you down. What's that word? What's the word I'm thinking of? You were sabotaging.
Oh.
You have people saying he was sabotaging.
Yeah, to get the buyouts.
Yeah, you have people. Again, I'm not condoning that. Believe that. But you have Auburn fans and even non-Auburn fans, buddies of ours in the media that do this like we do, and some of them who do it even better than we do, who are out there saying, dude, this is bad. This is a bad look for Auburn and Hugh Freeze. Like, bro, what was going on in that building? What was happening in those offensive meetings? What was the conversations like on the sidelines on Saturdays? You have people out there truly questioning this guy on what he was doing on the offensive side of the football.
A perfect example is Peter Burns, who tweeted out during the game.
From SEC Network.
From SEC Network and ESPN. Yeah. He says, I'm watching the Vanderbilt-Auburn game, .. What on earth was Freeze doing with this offense the last few years?
Exactly.
People that aren't inside the building and that watch Auburn football from a distance.
So fans, absolutely should be upset. You absolutely should be fed up with what you had to go through and what you had to watch for the last 2.5 years. Right? So that's the offensive side. I want to go in on the defensive side here for just a second, because I have said it for the last 1.5 years that DJ Durkin has turned this defense around. If there's ever a game where the defense doesn't show up at this point, then they deserve a pass. They deserve some credit. They deserve a little bit of leniency.
Sure.
Because they've done nothing but do their part and then some. Again, we said it. They've gone and won you games by themselves, right? But it is unfortunate, and that's the word I use. It really is just unlucky, unfortunate, whatever word you want to use, that this was the game the defense decided. And I'm not saying they... It's unfortunate that this is the game the defense couldn't hold on.
Sure.
That they gave up some plays that they normally don't. That they gave up more points than they have all season. More points than they have in a loss in over 2 years, right? It's unfortunate that it happened this way in this game where the offense finally turns it around. But here's my point. My point is, we almost called this. Folks, it's not a coincidence that the first game that DJ Durkin was the interim head coach in a crazy week, in pretty much a short week, where he had more responsibilities than he's had in years, more responsibility than he's ever had at Auburn. It's not a coincidence that that same week is the week that the defense had its worst performance.
In the week that you saw coverage busts and miscommunications, things that you just would not see if he had the normal headset on.
And I'm not here to say that I'm blaming DJ Durkin or the defense for, again, they deserve a pass in my book. And you know what? Unfortunate is the word I go back to. I'm saying it's not a coincidence.
Unfortunate that, in the grand scheme of things, this game doesn't matter because the offense and who was already calling plays has already thrown enough of the season away.
Right. 334-321-1390. Let's get to the phone lines. You're on the line. Who are we speaking with?
Hey, guys. It's John in Auburn.
What's going on, John?
Hey. I'll tell you what. This Auburn, the whole coaching carousel is about to get interesting. Because, I don't mean to be a little off topic here.
No, that's fine.
I have a feeling that Lane Kiffin may stay in Ole Miss. And if he does, that's just one less candidate in the market. And I will be very interested to see, if it's not Durkin, Drinkwitz's price tag went up, and I know Penn State, Florida, LSU will be in the hunt for him. I don't know if LSU can. I don't know what a good look it is if LSU hires Tulane's coach in Sumrall. So, I think we would all like it to be. Durkin or some a large percentage of us would be, but of the main candidates, I don't know if there's any red flags like there are a lot of other years.
Red flags as in guys you just would not want to hire for Auburn?
As in there are not many potential of the names that are out there. There are very few in the Auburn coaching search that you're just like, oh, please don't get that guy.
I have two.
I have one who's not currently coaching right now. But of the head coaches, Jacob's going to say one because he doesn't want to be sent to Azkaban because of the negative things that have been said. But Jimbo Fisher would be the only one for me right now is.
Same.
But again, like what you're saying, the current head coaches of where, regardless of whichever direction Auburn went, it would not be, oh, no.
I mean, and considering what we've come from in the last few years and several head coaches in a row, I mean, to have the production we've had with generationally bad coaches, his future's right.
What's that?
Thank you, guys.
Oh, yeah, appreciate the call, John. Appreciate that. 334-321-1390. I get what he's saying. I do. Of the legitimate names that are out there, right, that Auburn or people have been floating around for Auburn. I get it. And I think that's a good spot to be in. I think he also brings up an interesting point too, right? If you start talking about current head coaches who are being thrown around for big name jobs, Lane Kiffin, Eli Drinkwitz, etc., if they stay at their current school, that limits the amount of names to fill the jobs, right? If a coach like, take Eli Drinkwitz to Penn State, for example. Okay, Eli Drinkwitz leaving one P4 job to fill another P4 job doesn't really do anything, right? That name just comes off the market and another job comes open. That's an equal move in terms of the coaching market, if that makes sense, right?
Sure, yeah, you're not bringing somebody else into the equation.
Correct, yeah. That's why And after thinking on it this weekend, I think this is where I am, and we'll say this as we go to break. If it's not DJ Durkin for me, if it's not, because I haven't fully decided if I'm all in on him. I think he deserves a conversation, no doubt. But for me personally, in terms of the next head football coach for Auburn, if it's not DJ Durkin, that reason right there is why I think Auburn needs to go after a first-time head coach. I think that's why you need to go find one of the best coordinators in the game. I don't care if it's offensive, defensive. I don't care if he's a running back coach. I don't care if he's a special team coach. Go get somebody that's been in a winning program or under winning coaches and has been around for some time. Somebody who's young, somebody who's hungry, and somebody who can be here for the next 20 years. That's where I'm at. If it's not DJ Durkin, go get a coordinator. Go get somebody and take a chance. I think that's where I'm at. Because of those reasons and a whole lot more, but after this weekend, that's the boat that I'm in. We'll take a break. We'll come back, wrap up the first hour of today's show. Phone lines continue to be open if you want to be a part of it. 334-321-1390. Several text messages to get to in the on-the-line text box right after this.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. Online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Wrapping up hour number one here on ESPN 106.7. We've got a whole another 60 minutes coming up here shortly, but let's get to the phone lines to wrap up the first hour. 334-321-1390. And we've got Jay in Columbus. You're on the line. What's going on, man?
Hey, guys. Great show. Great show.
Appreciate it.
You had mentioned you wouldn't mind getting a coordinator or someone who was a position coach at a winning program. When you said that, there was only one name that came to mind, and he's from Columbus, Georgia. In fact, he played football at Auburn. He has won a state high school football championship.
Yep, I know where this is going. This name's actually, funny enough, been brought up a time or two.
And he was working on the Auburn staff when Gus was there. He went to Georgia Southern, coached the bowl game, won the bowl game, went to Georgia as a running backs coach. Unfortunately, he's not doing well at Georgia State, but I think he would be a good recruiter. He recruited well at Georgia. He understands the layout of the land in both Alabama and Georgia, played at Auburn. You already know who I'm going to say, Dale McGee. Since you said that, that person would check your boxes. He's having a hard time this year at Georgia State, but wherever he went, he's won. He's done well.
Yeah. Interesting. I don't think that's the name.
That was not the name I was thinking, no, but I don't think that's a bad option. Whatsoever.
I haven't heard that name yet, to be quite honest with you. I have not heard that name yet. And I think all the reasons you bring up, Jay, are very, very accurate, especially just the locational ties alone.
Okay. Yeah, for that and recruiting. And then you mentioned it, like what you were talking about, back-to-back national titles under the Nick Saban, now Kirby Smart tree of back-to-back national championships with a running quarterback coach. Or the running back coach at Georgia.
Yeah. Jay, we appreciate it, man. That's a great great name. We appreciate you. We're getting bumped out of here with the music. Interesting. I have not heard that name yet in terms of Auburn's coaching search. Dale McGee. Yeah. I mean, he nailed it. Was on the Auburn staff in 2013 as an analyst. Played college ball. Coached at Georgia. Now at Georgia State. Throw that one in the mix.
Get back to dominating the Columbus tie lines for recruiting as well.
Yeah, and then the direct ties to Atlanta, too, right there. I mean, not a bad option. Jay, we appreciate the call to end hour number one. Phone lines are still open as we get into hour number two. Stick around.
Is an Auburn Network production. You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what sports talk radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Happy Monday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here at hour number two during On the Line on ESPN 106.7. It is the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. He is Christian Griffin. We appreciate you being with us on this sunny but chilly day in the Auburn-Opelika area. As our number one is in the books, that means our number two is underway. And if you missed any of the first hour or any of our shows at any point in time, you can go back and listen to the podcast version of them on our station website at ESPNAU.com. In our number one, we talked all things Auburn and Vanderbilt. What happened in Nashville? Auburn drops it by a touchdown in overtime, 45-38 against Vandy. We talked all about it. The offense looking good, the defense not so much. Why that is, which one was more surprising. Also, what happens with DJ Durkin. We'll get into some more of that here in our number two. But that was all in the first hour. So if you missed it, again, you can go back and listen to the podcast version of the show in the podcast center on our station website at ESPNAU.com.
Here in hour number two, yeah, we continue some more about just the offense, the defense as a whole, the defense for the future for the Auburn Tigers and just what it's going to look like here in the next couple of weeks. Also going to take a look around the SEC and the top 25 from last weekend. We'll have a lot more time throughout the week to talk a little bit more about the offense and defense to where we'll save a lot more of those conversations for later on throughout the week. But want to be able to look around the SEC, the top 25 for a slate that wasn't overly sexy as we talked about, but delivered once again. And we'll talk about all of those. We'll also have a little discussion about redshirting and how, well, how in a couple years that's not going to be a thing anymore, because hopefully there's legitimate conversations of just allowing everybody 5 years and no redshirt years. I'm sure medical stuff might change that a little bit, but just the I'm not going to play, I'm going to sit out and not waste a year of eligibility. But as of right now, that's still a thing, and that's now a conversation for the future with Auburn quarterbacks. So we'll have a nice little discussion on that before we get to Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network. All of that coming up here in our number two. The phone lines are open at 334-321-1390. Any conversations you would like to have, any names that pop up, are you still in the full-on believer, or do you not believe that DJ Durkin should be a legitimate candidate for the Auburn head football coaching job? Based off of what you saw on Saturday, is that a complete pass just because of how much was thrown at him in 6 days of work? That's kind of where we finished up those conversations in hour number one. The text box is open as well at 334-784-1067. And we're about to get to answer some more of those here in just a few minutes. But, sir, congratulations. Round two for both of us. One game was a little bit more dramatic than the other one, I would say.
I would say so, yeah.
Congratulations to Lee Scott Academy and Auburn High School for making it to round two of the AHSAA state playoffs.
Yeah, Friday night was incredible.
I'll second that.
For the first 12 minutes of game time, about the first 30 minutes of my broadcast, I was not in a good mood. I was not happy.
Deja vu to a T, right?
I mean, to an absolute T. I said it. You could not have drawn it up any more identical from what happened in the first matchup between Auburn High and Vestavia Hills and what happened in the first quarter on Friday night at the Duck. It was scary. Like, it was legitimately like, what in the world is going on here? Vestavia jumped on Auburn 21-0 in the first quarter, which is exactly what they did the first time, where they won the coin toss, they took the football, went right down the field, then Auburn turned it over, Vestavia scored, then they blocked a punt, and they scored again. And it was 21-0 at the end of the first quarter, and we were like, well, been a good year.
Yeah, before it feels like you even took your first commercial break and settled in.
Yeah, literally. And it was like, the term that I used was copied and pasted, because that's what they did. And it was so weird. And it was like, man, how is this happening, right? How is this going down like this? And then the next three quarters was some of the most insane football I've ever seen in my life. Auburn High, outscored Vestavia Hills 52-20 after the first quarter. That's absurd, okay? Scored 21 unanswered in the second quarter. We're knotted up at 21 apiece. And then the second half was just back and forth, a fist fight, man, just back and forth to the chin, to the body, to the legs. I mean, it was the craziest game that I've ever called in my broadcasting career. And Auburn overcomes it. Auburn High gets revenge against Vestavia Hills and wins the first round playoff game at the Duck 52-41. And our reward is heading to Daphne this week, 3.5 hours south, baby. But yes, it was incredible.
Ours was a little bit less dramatic, but still was absolutely incredible to call and to be a part of. Again, this was Lee Scott Academy's first ever game in the postseason of the AHSAA. Again, moving to the AHSAA from the AISA last year, came within a game that ended up being a non-region game last year that kept Lee Scott out of the playoffs. This year, finished 8-2 in the regular season, not only played in their first ever postseason game in the AHSAA, but hosted. And they hosted Hale County. And Lee Scott loves being able to run the football. And when you have a little bit of rain and it makes things a little bit tougher to throw the football, you force their hand even more so. And when you have number 30 in the backfield by the name of Brooke Zachary, who just won Orthopedic Clinic High School Player of the Week. And so shout out to him. Six total touchdowns in the 42-14 win.
That's absurd.
Over Hale County. Had 198 rushing yards. Also had, I believe, 39 receiving yards. Had his first receiving touchdown of the year on a little swing pass, basically the extension of the run. But Lee Scott was able to just dominate the line of scrimmage, go downhill whenever they wanted to. Max Hammer was 7 of 8 through the air all night.
That's light work.
And makes life pretty easy when you have a couple guys that are banged up and you're able to clap your hands, snap the football, and turn to your right or to your left and give the ball to Griffin Gaston, give it to Braxton Cox, give it to Brooke Zachary. And then when you need to, throw the ball downfield to your targets as well. So 42-14, Lee Scott won that one. We now don't travel as far because it was either going to be Montgomery Academy or Flomaton. And hopefully when I say MA around here, especially the 3A level, people know that that's Montgomery Academy because my color commentator, Rhett Chrome, said Madison Academy is not 3A football. And it took him 3 or 4 times to realize, no, brother. Down here, MA is Montgomery Academy. And
wow. So, good prep there, Rhett.
Yeah.
Nicely done, brother.
But Montgomery Academy beat Flomaton 42-0. And so we don't have to make the trip to the beach. Instead, only about a 45-50-minute drive to Montgomery. So should be a whole lot of fun. And then looking on the other side, still a very big if, but my goodness. Randolph County and Bayside Academy playing the game below us. If you could get very similar to what could be Auburn Opelika in the next round, you could get Lee Scott Academy and Randolph County, basically a rematch of a really, really fun game in the regular season. But both of these teams moving on to round 2.
Yeah, Auburn again taking on Auburn High, that is. We're going to go down to Daphne on Friday. It's about 3.5 hours. So,
and mentally, your round 2 is our round 3.
Correct. 7A is basically a round ahead of everybody else, just because they play one less game, which, I mean, is what it is. There's mixed feelings on that. There's just less teams, and so less teams make the playoffs, so there's one less game for 7A compared to all
the
other ones.
Why is it not just played where you don't play last weekend, and then you don't get the bye week in the middle of the playoffs?
Yeah, I don't know.
Just so that way everything is
consistent.
Paired up.
Yeah, but with that, though, because 7A then doesn't play the day after Thanksgiving on Black Friday, because that's what everybody else does, right? 6A through 1A, which is then why 7A plays on the Wednesday for the state championship game on December 3rd. So I guess it all works out that way, right? Again, there's pros and cons.
It probably does help with scheduling because places like Crampton Bowl and stuff like that hosts 6 or 7.
Sure. Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah. Stop.
I didn't even mean to. Yeah. Host so many playoff games to where if you throw in a 7A game on top of that, it makes it it that much
worse. Right. So 7A is basically a round ahead. So we're playing in the quarterfinals this week. Going down to Daphne. And yeah, look, I may not like them, but shout out to Opelika, man. The Dogs go up to Hewitt Trustful and pull off an upset. They get over the road playoff barrier that they have not been able to get through in quite some time. And so they're coming home. They're going to host Baker on Friday at Bulldog Stadium. And yes, if Auburn High and if Opelika win their games, which I would say they are favored to do, it would set up for Auburn High to host Opelika at Duck Sanford Stadium in the state semifinals. Which would just, I mean...
Which would then possibly set up Auburn Central, or Auburn Opelika and Central in the state championship. Right?
Oh, yeah. It'll most likely be Central Thompson in the one semis and Auburn Opelika. If I were making predictions, I would say Central Thompson on one side and Auburn Opelika on the other. And any combination of those is incredible. So, yeah.
Who was the four seed in the 7-8, y'all's region?
Out of our region, yeah. It was Central, Auburn, Carver, and Opelika.
Oh, Carver was 3.
Yes.
Did Carver?
No, Carver was 4. Apologies. Opelika ended up getting to 3. Carver went to Thompson and lost. Because Thompson was the 1 seed. So, yeah, Carver went up to Thompson and got smacked.
But impressive that in both of our regions, 3 of the 4 teams made it to the second round.
Yeah, that is really impressive.
Because for Lee Scott, it's Glenwood, Lee Scott, and Randolph County.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we're going to have more playoff coverage for you. With that, just a programming note while we're on the subject. We will not have a show on Friday just because of our travel schedules and preparing for that and things like that. So we'll talk more about it throughout the week. But yeah, no show for us on Friday. The other shows will be on. But since we're traveling and playoff football and stuff, we will not be on the air on Friday. Somebody texted into our text box, though, at 334-784-1067 says Montgomery Academy is very good, in case you were not aware. They said Montgomery Academy is very good. So in case you needed any more stress, you know.
I have seen with my eyes, and I have, yes, been informed that it is most likely Montgomery Academy and probably Mars Hill that are the 2 favorites. Yes.
Yeah. Our man Eric in Auburn, who one of our most active texters in the text box, has a question about DJ Durkin, which we're going to get to along with some other Auburn questions. But Eric, I see your text complimenting us, and I will read that to Christian off air. Appreciate that. Very complimentary. No, very, very complimentary of you and I on the air in terms of our play-by-play. So thank you, Eric. We really appreciate you, brother. We're going to get to your question.
I'll say a blind thank you.
Yes, you'll say thank you, I promise. So earlier in the show, again, we'll read some of these and then take a break and come back and talk about them.
Sorry to totally cut you off. One more time, going back to high school. It was the first time this year that I've been able to listen to you. Because our game ended so quickly.
Oh, my God.
I got in the car after doing postgame and still had 8 minutes left in the fourth quarter.
Bro, our game did not start. It did not kick off until 7:12.
And so for anybody, I just found this out literally in between hour 1 and 2. For those that were at Judd Scott Field and saw all of a sudden it be bright outside, that was because there were fireworks at the Duck because the game started so dang late.
Yeah, that was us. Sorry. For what it's worth.
I thought like a transformer exploded like 3 or 4 times because it
was
just...
That's a fair assumption, yeah.
I didn't hear anything, but I even got a text from my girlfriend who was at the house and said, what was that?
You want to know who told the play-by-play guy that the game was starting 12 minutes late? Nobody.
You want to know that fireworks were being...
Yeah, you want to know who told the play-by-play guy that fireworks were going to go off when Auburn took the field? Nobody. It's fine, though. We managed.
We're all on air.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
The fireworks can
go back and if you go back to Spotify or station website and listen to our games, which you can do at any time if you would like to. Just search the Auburn High Sports Network, the Lee Scott Sports Network, or go to ESPNAU.com in the high school section. You can go back and listen. No, we're on the air. We're like basically just ad libbing a pregame segment because we didn't know the game was delayed by 12 minutes. And
thanks, TV.
Yeah, literally. No, I literally lean out the window and I was like, oh, hey. There's fireworks. That's cool. Had no idea. No idea what was happening.
It's okay. On the Lee Scott Sports Network, Rhett Chrome let me know that heat lightning is not a real thing.
Well, nobody's as smart as Rhett Chrome, apparently.
If you want to learn a random fact every single Friday, you listen to Rhett Chrome on the Lee Scott Sports Network. It's incredible. I wish I could take notes of everything that I've had to mute my mic for because I was laughing so hard. But last Friday, it was the fact that... heat lightning is not a thing. If it's lightning, it's just because it's nighttime and it's hot. I don't know.
I don't think I believe that. But you know what? I've never met anybody like Rhett Crum.
Two Fridays ago, I learned that Real Town is not in Notasulka. It's in Real Town, but Real Town doesn't have an official post office. So because they cannot send mail out of Real Town, they have to say that they are out of Notasulka.
But yet, he didn't know who your second-round matchup was in the playoffs. I don't know, man. I was about to say, priorities may not be in line there.
I don't know, but if there's any Tuesday night trivia coming up, I know who my partner is for that.
Yeah, I think I would call Rhett Crum as well. Okay, we need to take a break and come back and talk about something. So we've got a ton of text messages we'll get to. Phone lines are open as well if you want to be a part of the show. 334-321-1390 is that. We're going to get back to talking Auburn University football. Bunch of text messages there to get to in regard to that with coaching and the offense and defense and things like that. Plus, Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network will join us coming up at 3:30. That's all here on the Monday edition of On the Line. Stick around.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
We are back here on the Monday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. About to get to the phone lines, but I do want to read a couple of these text messages that we can kind of answer throughout here the rest of the show. Someone texted in earlier in the show, and we were talking about the Auburn offense. I think it was you, Christian, in particular, talking about the Auburn offense on just 6 days of preparation and what they did against Vanderbilt. Yeah. Somebody says, so they basically have 3 weeks to game plan for Alabama, using the bye week, the Mercer game, and Alabama. And not that you want to think of it that way, but that's pretty much the only game you have left because Auburn ain't going bowling. Well, I guess they technically could.
They could, and
that's the only game that matters now, other than don't lose to Mercer.
That's what I was about to say, is Mercer's 8-1.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Auburn's playing Mercer, and I think Kentucky's playing Tennessee Tech, and Tennessee Tech is 10-0. And so it's like, what are we doing here with these cupcake games, guys? Like, we gotta figure something out.
Apparently, Kentucky's a world beater again with what they did to Florida over the weekend.
That's crazy.
That was,
but I saw somebody, I saw a bunch of comments saying, you know, Kentucky for the upset over the Golden Eagles of Tennessee Tech.
Jeez. Well, was it Kentucky that, yeah, they played Toledo in the opener, right?
And it was, yeah, Kentucky was favored by like 10.5, and everybody took Toledo at half. Yeah. It feels like half the people took Toledo to win because of, was the quarterback Gladson?
Oh, I forget. Yeah. I just know Toledo was supposed to be good, and everybody picked them to beat Kentucky in the opener.
It is. Tucker Gleason.
He was projected
to be incredible. Has struggled this year, but Toledo still found a way to cover. And so, yeah. Tennessee Tech, baby. Come on.
That's what great teams do.
That is what great teams do.
Let's get to the phone lines, 334-321-1390. We got our man Dak has been waiting on through the break. What's going on, brother? How are you on this Monday?
Hey, guys. Great. Trying to stay warm today, man.
I hear that. Yeah.
Oh, man. Of course, football practice is going to be a little chilly today.
That's right. That wind's howling out there, too.
Yeah, yeah. Well, before I get to the Auburn game, so what's the chatter on Lane Kiffin today? Have you heard anything?
I know he's...
Other than social media, I haven't heard anything.
Yeah. Do you see what he posted today, Dak?
Yeah, I did. It was funny, wasn't it?
I tip my cap. It's funny.
Yeah. But, hey, I got a buddy that's still in the NFL, works in the office of, and I won't say which New York team, but, dude, that's cooking. They going after Lane Kiffin, man. The Giants are.
Really? Oh, I did see where they fired Dable today, and the OC took over as interim, right? You think the Giants are going after Lane Kiffin?
You know who the starting quarterback is in New York?
Oh, it's Giants.
Oh, man.
Absolutely. Woo! I haven't even thought about it.
No way Lane Kiffin would go to New York. No way.
But let me tell you something. He would be there in a New York minute before Ole Miss. I don't know his, you know, I don't know where what he's thinking now, but that was his job. That's what he wanted for the longest.
Man, I just don't know. That's insane. So you're saying inside sources have it to where Lane Kiffin is near the top or at the top of the Giants board now?
That's the top of their list. They're going after him now.
Golly.
Whether or not that's something he's interested in, I can't say, but they're going after him.
What? I'm kind of looking it up as we go. I mean, in terms of what he's making in Oxford, what compared to what he could make in New York as the as an NFL head coach, I mean, it would be a pay raise for sure.
Yeah, and look, guys, he's an NFL guy, man. I could see him being the coach of the Dallas Cowboys at some point. I mean, he is an NFL coach, and I know a lot of them go back to when he was 30 years old. Guys, they got to forget about that. I hope he goes back to the NFL and stays, to be honest with you.
Well, let me ask you this, Dak, because I think the main difference in a college coach and an NFL coach is recruiting, right? I think you would probably agree with that
right.
A college coach, you've got to be a good recruiter. In the NFL, you just got to be a good coach, right? Do you trust Lane
That's
Kiffin
right.
outside of recruiting, because he's clearly done that very well, do you trust him to just be an X's and O's guy to lead an NFL franchise with somebody above him calling the big shots?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I do, man.
That's fascinating.
But
I had not even thought about that today.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, I keep asking the question, and I'm trying to put myself in his shoes. I know Ole Miss people, what they're going to say, they're going to argue this fact. I think he's done about as much as he can do for them, okay? And he might could keep at that pace for a while, but that's the argument that he has about going to LSU or Florida, or even, you know, to the NFL.
Or
but
even Auburn last year, right?
Absolutely. But I just don't think that he can get Ole Miss over the top. I really don't. And if they're happy with making it to the playoffs every year, then, I mean, hell, I guess right now we would be, wouldn't we?
Yeah. I think there's an argument that Ole Miss could never get over the top. Now, I think in today's world it
right.
may be a little bit different, but before NIL transfer portal, that was always
absolutely.
The case.
Yeah, absolutely. And I still don't think that they're going to, you know, have a chance to win it all. But, you know, if he went to LSU or Florida or Auburn, I think you would have a better chance.
Yeah.
Of course, it's out of the question for us at this point. But
that's
we'll
crazy,
see.
Hey man, we're up against our break, brother. That's incredible.
All right,
we appreciate you, man. All right.
Yeah, man.
That's Dak. Think about that.
Because for some reason that hadn't even crossed my mind.
For fans that had not seen, Brian Daboll got fired from the New York Giants today.
Yeah, after like a 33-60.
Mm-hmm.
record or whatever.
Which they looked like they were turning it around, but that was more of Jackson Dart and Cam Scataboo, who are now banged up.
One is relearning how to walk, and the other one can't play a game without destroying his head.
I mean, you look at NFL head coaches, top 10 paid coaches are making 13 plus a year, 13 mil a year, okay? Average salary is about 7 mil, okay? So it would be a pay raise for him. God, I just don't know. I don't think he fits New York. I think if it was another California job like before, maybe, but I don't know.
If it was the Saints or something.
Yeah, something like that, but I don't know, man.
Giants, just go get Belichick. Easy.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure his girlfriend would love to go back up north where it snows all the time rather than Chapel Hill.
Did you see that speech he gave after the second straight win they had?
I did. In the comments, like, he was fired up.
Yeah.
It's like, really?
Fired me up. To go
I saw
to bed.
Somebody. Somebody said it got me ready to run through a straight open doorway instead of a brick wall. It was fantastic. All right, we got to get to break. Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network joins us after this.
We're halfway through hour number two. You've got 30 more minutes of On the Line on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
We've got 30 more minutes here on the Monday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. He's Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. We appreciate you being with us. And we get to our usual Monday guest who joins us every week at this time. He is with the Auburn Sports Network and helps them do a fantastic job in all their coverage. Jacob Hillman is joining us now. What's going on, my man? You staying warm out there today?
Yeah, doing my best. It feels like basketball season and winter is here for the first time this year, and it feels like November football, and it's it's cold, but it's that great time of year where so much is happening on the campus of Auburn University.
Well, it's definitely crossover season to a T, with fall sports wrapping up, winter sports are underway, and I know senior night for volleyball coming up, and you've got football, of course, rolling on, basketball's underway, and things like that. And so let's start with the big one, right? Let's start with football and what happened in Nashville over the weekend, as Auburn goes up to take on Vanderbilt, interim head coach DJ Durkin, and the guys go up with Derek Nix calling plays offensively, and it ends up in overtime, 45-38 loss for the Tigers. It doesn't make it feel any better in terms of a loss, Hillman, but at least it looked a little bit different.
Yeah, and starting off with it was a really a heck of a fight from this team, and I'll reiterate what Coach Durkin said in his post-game presser. You know, these guys did not come here for moral victories, to get close or anything like that. All these guys came to Auburn to win games and win championships, and obviously there's still an outlook for Auburn to win these last two games, win an Iron Bowl, win and go to a bowl game. That, you know, right now that is the short-term goal. That is exactly what this team's looking to do, and it's going to fight its hardest to do. So that's why it was encouraging to see that game play out the way it did Saturday night. Unfortunately, it didn't end exactly how it wanted to, but it was still just an impressive performance by specifically the offense and so many guys in that offensive room. There are so many notes that after that game that you could see that just, you know, it was really an impressive offensive performance, whether it was the 300-yard passer with a 100-yard receiver and a 100-yard rusher. That's just an insane stat. The last time that happened was the 2004 SEC championship game with Jason Campbell, Cadillac Williams, Courtney Taylor. Like, that's how impressive that performance was. Like, the last time it happened was a national championship winning team in the SEC title game. So just a really impressive game plan from Derek Nix and that staff, and way to execute it from all the players involved in this game. And then obviously disappointing performance from the defensive side, as DJ Durkin talked about in his post-game presser, of just it just wasn't exactly where they wanted to be. And I will also mention Vanderbilt was probably the second-best offense Auburn has played this season. You could argue one of the best, just the way that team converts third downs and is able to continue to milk the clock throughout games. It's a tough offense to game plan for, and Diego Pavi is obviously one of the more exciting players in the nation, one of the best quarterbacks in the nation. So it was a tough game plan, and the defense made plays when it needed to, like late in the game when Vanderbilt inexplicably goes for it on 4th-and-1 in field goal range with a tie game with a minute left. And Bryce Diaz, the freshman linebacker, is right there with everything contained, getting held, and Pavia falls down, and Auburn unable to convert, but it gets the game to overtime. So overall, while the defense obviously wasn't as it had been all season long, the offense stepped up and did its best to keep Auburn where it needed to be to try to be in a position to win the game.
Hillman, I guess it doesn't change my overall question, but was it a pregame picture that I saw that you were able to post from kind of the Auburn fan base side of things, or were you able to go and experience this game a little bit more as a fan?
Yeah, I was in the radio booth with the Auburn Sports Network, but I mean, it was a heck of an Auburn showing. Just again, it's Auburn North in
it
Nashville,
is, yeah.
And that visiting sideline was packed with orange and navy, and you could hear it throughout the game. The chants and just the cheering from the Tigers faithful on that side of the field. And you could really sense it late in that game when Auburn had a chance to get the ball back, and the sideline was getting that crowd fired up. And even and pregame at the coin toss, I'm not sure if they showed this on the TV broadcast, but there was obviously the unsportsmanlike conduct that was assessed to the entire roster of both Auburn and Vanderbilt prior to the game. That brought a lot of energy to the game with Vanderbilt's team coming off the sideline during the coin toss, and Auburn's team following right after that. That just took the energy to another level, and it continued throughout that game.
Well, yeah, it obviously played a big factor, and so that, I guess we should have asked about that as well. Yeah, was there something prior to kickoff or prior to that moment that you saw that kind of riled up both teams? Or was it just the fact of knowing that this game has turned into a little bit more of a rivalry over the past couple of years? Diego Pavia obviously playing a big factor as well. And then the amounts of orange and blue that you were able to see when you looked in the stadium, of how cool of a moment that was. But also, was there something else that sparked it? Or was it just, again, the nature of both of these teams of wanting to go out and dominate?
It's kind of funny because you mentioned the kind of the rivalry that started to become. This is one of Auburn's three permanent opponents in the SEC now, annual opponents that Auburn will play every single year going forward in the SEC, until obviously they discuss they're going to reevaluate that 4 years down the line. But it's Alabama, Georgia, and Vanderbilt for Auburn every single year in the SEC. And to answer the question, I don't know if anything in particular sparked it. I mean, Vanderbilt's sideline was the first to come off the sideline during the coin toss, and I don't know if that was just them just trying to get behind their team captains and whatnot. And then it was Auburn's sideline following right behind them. It was kind of an electric moment, to be completely honest. And I don't know, it just kind of made that game feel a little bit bigger than a team with an interim head coach, and obviously Vanderbilt fighting for its playoff hopes.
We got our man Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network with us here on ESPN 106.7. So where does Auburn go from here, right? Because you obviously let go of Hugh Freeze. DJ Durkin takes over as the interim. A lot of changes within, and Auburn is within a touchdown again of a top 25 opponent. But now you've got a bye week, you've got Mercer, and then you've got a home Iron Bowl with what is right now a top 5 Alabama team. I mean, where does Auburn go from here in all facets, Hillman? And with a couple of weeks to prepare for that big-time matchup.
Yeah, this is a big week for Auburn, I feel like. One, to get healthy. Cam Coleman, I haven't even said his name, but just what an incredible athlete and warrior he is. He's been playing on kind of a tough ankle these last few weeks. He sprained it against Arkansas and has fought through it and played through it, and is continuing to shock and wow people around the country with his ability. And he did that again on Saturday night with his performance against Vanderbilt, with those two one-handed catches for the touchdown and the two-point conversion to Octopus. And I just really think that it's about getting healthy and really kind of some self-reflection for this team, because one, the offense finally has some momentum and looked really elite on Saturday night against Vanderbilt. The defense, on the other hand, obviously had a little bit of a setback. Didn't look like itself that it has been all season long. So now it's time for the Tigers to look within itself and see, okay, the offense has a lot of things to build on, and the defense has several things to work on and see, all right, how did Vanderbilt score on this long touchdown with this busted coverage? What happened here? What was the miscommunication? Was there just a call that was missed? What was it? And this Mercer team that's going to come to Jordan-Hare Stadium in a little less than a week or a little less than 2 weeks, it is an explosive offense at the FBS level. Mercer has not lost since week one of the season and is on a great streak right now. Just beat Western Carolina 49-47 in a big shootout. Put up 800 yards of offense against BMI. This Mercer team is not one to look down on, and it'll be a tough challenge for this defense especially. So I think this Auburn team just needs to look within itself and build off what was the positives of the offense, and now – this defense finally has a game that isn't what looks like the elite level it's played at the entire season. How can it build off of that as well?
Well, as much fun as football is, or maybe isn't, depending on how you look at it, right, with Auburn in a bye week now, and then again, as you mentioned, Mercer, and then the home Iron Bowl versus Alabama. Do want to talk a little of Auburn basketball, who is back in action this week before they head up to Birmingham to take on Houston on Sunday. What have you seen so far from the new-look Tigers? A lot of new players, of course, a new coach as well, but a nice bounce-back win the other night for Auburn.
Yeah, that Merrimack win was a huge one for this Auburn team in the sense that obviously Monday night, the season opener, the first game of the Stephen Pearl era, was not the performance that they were looking for. And Coach Pearl was not happy with it. These players were not. They knew that they should have performed better against Bethune-Cookman in that season opener. And they took it personally against Merrimack and did it without Keyshawn Murphy, who rolled his ankle against Bethune-Cookman, and I was unable to go against Merrimack. So it was really good to see guys like Emeka Oporum and Sebastian Williams-Adams have the performances that they did on Thursday. Sebastian Williams-Adams feels like one of those guys that is going to be ultra important to Auburn's success this upcoming year. Obviously, the big names like Keyshawn Hall, Keyshawn Murphy, Tahad Pettifer are going to be the ones that drive this team. But I think Williams-Adams, as a freshman, can be someone that takes Auburn to the next level, where it contends in the SEC or for a top five seed in the NCAA tournament. And that's kind of where we're trying to learn. We're going to find out this Sunday what Auburn's ceiling looks like for this team. And until then, it's really about getting Keyshawn Murphy healthy and kind of solidifying the defensive presence for the Tigers, because this team is going to be elite offensively. That's what we've seen. And whether it's Keyshawn Hall scoring 20 a game, or Tahad Pettifer being the engineer of the offense, or Keyshawn Murphy, whenever he does get healthy, with his shot-making ability on the inside, they're going to be able to score. But it's the defensive side of things that is going to have to come along and help Auburn win some of those ranked games and some of those big-time SEC matchups when we get to January, February, and March.
Auburn takes on number 2 Houston on Sunday, November 16th, up in Birmingham, again at 2 p.m. Last year, that was the welcome to college basketball Tahad Pettifer game. And although the sophomore guard has struggled here and there shooting the basketball, I know Stephen Pearl had comments about that earlier, about how he's not necessarily concerned whatsoever. But how nice could it possibly be to have Tahad seeing a little bit of a different rim during his freshman campaign? Only shot 36% from the floor at Neville Arena, but shot almost 50% on the road. So what could a different gym, a different environment, and a top team like Houston do to try and get that point guard that we know has every single ability to find the bottom of the net to hopefully get him going on Sunday?
That's a great note, by the way. You're right, because I think that so far this year, because, again, Pettifer hasn't been this guy that's come out and just exploded for 20 or more points. He's been steady so far this year, but he's obviously not up to the standards that he was at last year, and that's a compliment to him. As it's just really, just like you said, it's the shooting that hasn't come along for him early in the season so far, and I think that going to Birmingham and seeing that rim could do wonders for him. We'll see come Sunday afternoon against the top-ranked team in the country, but it's just going to be a really tough test for this team. This Houston team is elite, brings back several guys from its national runner-up team last year that were critical in that run. And it's going to be a big test for these newcomers and this team in its first high major matchup of the season. And, you know, I think that this team will be ready for it. I think that they're going to, it's going to be like a home game being in Birmingham. Last year was in Houston, in Houston proper, in the Toyota Center. And this year it's going to be at the BJCC in Birmingham with a ton of Auburn fans in attendance. So I'm looking for that to be a factor as well. And I think Auburn can really give the Cougars a run for it.
Well, that'll be on Sunday. Auburn plays at home tomorrow against Wofford for one more tune-up game before that. All of those games will be broadcasted over on Wings 94.3. Part of a busy week, but not as busy as it could be, again, with football on the bye week. But Hillman, tell everybody what's going on with the Auburn Sports Network, starting tonight with Tiger Talk, men's basketball. We got women's basketball going on tonight as well, so tell the people what they need to know.
Yeah, you're exactly right. Right now, or tonight on Wings 94.3 FM, is Tiger Talk. We'll have offensive coordinator Derek Nix. We'll have Crime Dog coach Wesley McGriff. Women's basketball coach Larry Vickers as the Tigers take on UNC Greensboro. And then Stephen Pearl to talk about the upcoming week ahead for Auburn men's basketball. And at the same time, Auburn women's basketball will tip off at 6 o'clock Central right here on ESPN 106.7 against UNC Greensboro. Britt Bowen and Dr. Larry DeShera will have the call beginning at 5:45. Auburn's looking to continue the momentum. It's built a big overtime win at Charlotte last week, and then a dominating win over Alabama State before its season really starts to get rolling here in the next few weeks. And then tomorrow night, men's basketball against Wofford at 7 o'clock on Wings 94.3 FM, on the air at 6:30. Auburn volleyball, senior night against Texas on Wednesday at 6 o'clock Central at Neville Arena. That's free to attend. That is a top 4 Texas team, so a huge matchup for the Tigers to try and help it NCAA tournament hopes and potentially in the SEC tournament as well, as that's a new wrinkle to the volleyball schedule this upcoming year. And then on Sunday, men's basketball against number one Houston at Legacy Arena in Birmingham. Andy Bergstrom, Randall Dickey, Brad Law on the call beginning at 1:30. And then the game tips off at 2 o'clock on Wings 94.3 FM. So like you said, no football, but still plenty of action here on the Plains, especially inside Neville Arena. Today starts 4 days of four events, or 4 days in a row of four events inside Neville Arena. So get out to the Nev and enjoy the Auburn Tigers.
Hillman, we appreciate it as always, my friend. Great information, great talking with you every Monday, and we'll do it again this time next Monday.
That's right. Thanks for having me on, guys. War Eagle.
That's Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network. Check them out wherever you can on all their social media platforms. And again, a ton of content coming up this week with Tiger Talk tonight on Wings, women's basketball here on ESPN. We'll tell you more about that and wrap up the show right after this.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin, online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Winding down here on the Monday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Thanks to Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network. Again, he joins us every Monday at 3:30 talking football, basketball, and all the great things that they have going on the network, which is two things tonight with Tiger Talk over on Wings 94.3. That'll start at 6. And then Auburn Women's Basketball, which will also start, tip-off is at 6. Broadcast starts at 5:45. And that's going to be right here on ESPN 106.7. As Auburn women's basketball will be taking on UNC Greensboro at home in Neville Arena, where Britt Bowen, Dr. Larry DeShero have the call. We're going to be in studio for a training night for all the new producers of Auburn women's basketball. So that's going to be here on ESPN 106.7. The drive will be ending early today, right around 5:35 or so. They'll be ending about 25 minutes early to allow the broadcast to start properly for Auburn women's basketball. So be sure you tune in for that here on ESPN. You've got Tiger Talk going to be on Wings, and then a bunch of basketball games, including tomorrow night on Wings as well. But that's all been part of a great show today. So if you missed it, go check it out on the podcast version of the show, wherever you get your podcast, or on our station website at ESPNAU.com. We've talked a lot of Auburn Vanderbilt, talked the offense, talked the defense, talked a little in between. We talked some coaching things and a lot of great conversations. So again, if you missed it, check it out on our station website at ESPNAU.com.
And tomorrow we're going to have some more conversations about the Auburn offense, the Auburn defense. We'll continue our coaching search conversation. Should be a whole lot of fun as we get to continue on with all of those conversations. We also get to hear from head coach of the Lee Scott Warriors, Coach Buster Daniel, coming off the big win over Hale County last Friday, previewing Montgomery Academy and everything the Warriors need to do to try and win in round two. And then most likely, if that's the case, they would host in round three, which would be a whole lot of extra motivation if you needed it whatsoever. But we'll talk with him on Tuesdays at 2:30.
Yeah, so that'll be tomorrow. You mentioned it, more coaching talk and things like that. And then we'll also preview a little Auburn basketball because they play tomorrow against Wofford. So should be a loaded show tomorrow. Wednesday is already a loaded show. Thursday is always a loaded show. And then no show for us on Friday. Again, we're both traveling for high school playoff football. And so it just works out best for us to not have a show on Friday. We hate to miss a show, but I mean, you do what you got to do sometimes. So
if there's one show to miss with Auburn on a bye week.
Yeah, that's right. I hate that we won't be able to preview the Houston game on Friday, but we'll be able to do it on Thursday, and Doug will be on. The drive will be on Thursday or on Friday, so no concerns there. So that's kind of what the rest of the week looks like, but appreciate you again for being here on this Monday. Stay warm out there. It's going to get warmer this week. Don't worry. This little cold front's supposed to move right along, and I'll just be upset about it. But we're back tomorrow, 2 to 4, right here on ESPN 106.7. Until then, he's Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. Stay safe. We'll talk to you later.